Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the KoogCenter.com podcast. My name is Jeff Neusser, here with my co-host Craig Powers, one of the one of my co-authors at KoogCenter.com. And Craig, I have to ask, have you recovered from Saturday yet?
No. And I think, like most of the readers, that really it was an extra punch in the nuts when Fowler had to tweet that game day was going to come if we had held on to the lead. And, you know, just all week I've been just thinking back to different plays, different things that could have happened. And it's been a while since we had something like that.
Yeah.
But I definitely didn't miss that part about being competitive. But, you know, it comes with the territory. Throughout college, that was kind of most of my experience, was thinking about how we blew leads. But so I'm back to that. So we've come full circle back to, you know, when we were just good enough to be competitive, but sometimes we win, like Colorado, sometimes we lose, and it's usually close. And now when we lose, it's just 10 times worse. We'd have become so numb to losing, and now we're back to no longer being numb. And that was pretty much the worst way to come out of that, was to lose like that.
Yeah, I haven't decided if that's worse than, say, you know, what happened last year where they got run over at the end or whatever. I mean, I was just sort of numb on Saturday night. I didn't know, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I mean, it was 10:30 at night by the time, you know, the game finished. And I just remember, like, staring at the television and just being like, yeah. I can't believe this happened. You know, but I could believe it, obviously. I mean, it's not – you know, it's not like it was unbelievable. You know, people throw around the word unbelievable all the time. And, you know, of course, being an English teacher, I'm one of those people who's like, stop saying things that don't really mean what you think they mean, you know. And unbelievable is one of those. Like, no, literally, it is not beyond belief. I just kept sort of staring at the television like, I'm having a hard time reconciling that just happened.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. And I'm not sure I just wasn't sure how I was going to like recover. And of course, you know, by Sunday I had recovered, although I did get the flu on Sunday, which sort of, you know, about the only thing that made Sunday bearable was the Seahawks beating the Giants against all odds, which gives me some hope this, for this Saturday. But, you know,
they have Eli Manning, a quarterback.
Yeah, no kidding. if the Seahawks can win a 10 a.m. game on the East Coast, the Cougars can surely beat Stanford. So
yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah, shocked. Yeah,
it's like it's like the Bears game last year when they inexplicably won.
This was even more than that though, because I mean, the Bears game you could kind of see it, not that you could see it coming necessarily, but just like. You know, it was sort of a sound plan, and they just sort of hung on, and, you know, Cutler was terrible, and it was just sort of like, you know, but that was, you know, the Seahawks, I mean, they just straight up, like, smacked the Giants around. I mean, it could have been two touchdowns worse.
It should have been, you know, 21-7, 28-7 at halftime.
I mean, at the very least, they should have scored six more points. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like assuming they didn't do anything else
just
stupid.
Get field goals.
Two field goals that they didn't turn it over in the 10. So, yeah. So anyway, so I have hope that anything is possible and anything can happen. Before we move on to Stanford, maybe just we could talk just about UCLA just a little bit and probably just a very brief little bit, because of course the news came down today that Jeff Toole has been cleared for contact, and then came down today that he will in fact play on Saturday against Stanford. So so we'll talk about that here shortly, but I don't know, just any sort of final thoughts on UCLA, Craig, as far as just, you know, we sort of covered a bunch of the angles. You know, you covered some of the defensive angles on the site this week, and, you know, I covered some of the offensive stuff. You know, sort of any final thoughts, just sort of wrapping that up, or anything to take away from that?
Well, one thing that Brian had mentioned to me, he's been in Pullman this week, going to some practices, talking to some of the players, and he was going to write a post on it, being I think he just got busy with other things. And on that Galvin touchdown, just something interesting, something positive. Galvin was just supposed to swing out, just supposed to be a swing pass, and the linebacker read it all the way, and it wasn't a scramble play or anything. Galvin just saw the linebacker cutting off and just took a few steps forward and knew that the linebacker wouldn't be able to recover, And luckily, Lobastal, you know, adjusted with him, and he had an easy touchdown. So that gives me some encouragement, you know, because as Brian also alluded to on the game thread, he was having some trouble reading his blockers. So, you know, getting to the right hole, seemed to want to, like, lower his head and run into people, which someone needs to tell him he weighs 110 pounds. He probably shouldn't be doing that. But we had the, you know, it's a shame because we really had a chance. We had the ball 5 minutes left in UCLA territory to just put the game away and if with a touchdown. And while, you know, we had plenty of chances to jump out on a big lead in the start of the game, and it just that was the story of the day. We just couldn't come through. And, you know, 25-20 lead, our defense had the opportunity to win the game, and they didn't. Now, you know, they had the opportunity last week, and they got the turnover. Well, they got a stop. They got the turnover this week. It doesn't happen, and that's just, you know, when you're playing close games all the time, you're not going to win every single one. And I think UCLA just had, with Rosario, just kind of overpowered us, and it was a shame that it had to end like that because we were so close to that 4-1 start that everyone was hoping for at the start of the year. And that's kind of what I'm having a hard time reconciling, is because I, you know, being the cynical normally person I am, I'm like, you know, I've seen too many Cougar teams, even too many Seahawk teams, too anything where they predict these great starts when they're playing easy teams, and it just never happens that way. And so I'm thinking 3-2, I hope, and now it's 3-2 is like super depressing, you know, because we were so close to 4-1. We were so close to, you know, relevancy, like, you know, because game day would be there. They'd have to do all these stories on Jeff Toole and Paul Wolf and whoever else, you know. They had to find the time, or it'd probably been all about Andrew Luck, but they'd be in Pullman and it would have been great. But, and that's what kind of the extra sting, but, you know, we are on the road, third straight game. We really showed that we can execute a game plan. We had our backup quarterback in there, and we still executed a game plan really well, and it just didn't work out in the end. And so that's encouraging.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when I sent the very first Cougar Sports Weekly, I sort of talked about, you know, expectations for the first five games, and, you know, trying to sort of, you know, people like to play the game trying to figure out how you're going to get to six wins, you know, because obviously the bowl game is sort of the standard for this year, and which, mm-hmm. you know, and one of the things that I said in that first one was, you know, I wasn't sure that a bowl game really should be the standard. I mean, I know that yeah. you know, probably that's coming from potentially, I've heard rumors that's coming from somewhere up on high, you know, that the six games is not just a figment of fans' imaginations, but that's sort of the expectation for Paul Wolf to keep his job. And, you know, and my point was sort of what Bill Connolly's point from, you know, Football Study Hall and Football Outsiders, when he did his WSU preview over the summer, you know, he talked about just how far behind, you know, WSU was, you know, behind everybody else, and just how large the gap was to make up. And so one of the points I was trying to make was this gap is so big, you know, to expect them to sort of close it from, you know, one or two wins to six wins in a year in which, you know, their half of the Pac-12 is going to be particularly tough. Mm-hmm. You know, I just sort of felt like, I don't know if you can expect that. This team could improve as much as humanly possible and still not maybe get past five wins. And so I thought, you know, after the first five, I was like, if they get to 3-2, I think I'll be pretty happy. And if they, you know, because I didn't want to see them, you know, get two wins out of the gate and then get destroyed by SDSU and then sort of have the wheels fall off. I was like, you know, if they can win the first two and one of the next three on the road, that's pretty good. And, you know, it's funny how perceptions start to change because, you know, mm-hmm. they go out and they destroy, you know, just absolutely annihilate their first two opponents. They didn't just beat them. I mean, they you know, obliterate them. And so then all of a sudden you've got to readjust, you know, do you readjust expectations? And I felt like, yeah, you probably should. I mean, you don't, you know, victory margin is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. And when you see it, when they are that much better than even two bad opponents, that still says something because they weren't that the last couple of years. And so I thought, okay, so you readjust. Well, you know, then they sort of are right there with San Diego State and then fall apart in the fourth quarter. And then, you know, they come back on Colorado. And so UCLA sort of becomes this watershed game, and they're, you know, obviously not able to finish the deal. And so I'm sitting there at the beginning of the year saying, well, you know, you should be pretty happy if they get to 3-2. And like you said, you know, we're all sitting here at 3-2 going, you know, it feels so dirty because we're like, we feel like we should be 4-1. And then beyond that, you know, you let yourself go the place where you're like, well, what if we had Tool and, you know, all those things. And so, you know, it is definitely a little strange, but I think, you know, the part of me that thought 3-2 at the beginning of the year thought, okay, maybe we can get two more wins, you know, maybe Oregon State, maybe Utah, if maybe they're not as good as we thought, you know, but, you know, I was sitting there going, you know, three more wins is going to be really tough to find, you know, the rest of the year. But I think what we've seen now is this, that, you know, it's not impossible to find three more wins. And it's not like I'm going to sit here and say, oh, they should win this game or they should win that game. But, you know, I think the only two games on the schedule that are pretty much no way is Stanford and Oregon. And I'm not even going to say, like, that they've got no chance against Stanford. I mean, I think because it's at home, I think they've got maybe a puncher's chance. But, you know, it's highly unlikely. But every other game, you know, I mean, what I've seen out of Arizona State so far this year, you know, yeah, they're good, but they haven't been nearly as good on the road. Utah was playing them tight until Utah decided they were going to turn the ball over five times. And so, you know,
Utah with their backup quarterback.
Yeah, with their backup quarterback. Exactly. And so now you got Utah with their backup quarterback coming to town. You get Oregon State at, you know, packed, you know, CenturyLink Field, and, you know, and then the Apple Cup, who knows about that. So, I mean, there's winnable games on the schedule, and I don't know that they're going to win three of them, but I think they could. And I guess the thing that gives me the most encouragement is I see a progression right now. And I know, you know, we like to say that, you know, progression, you know, that improvement's not linear, you know, and so they beat the crap out of two teams and they sort of seem to take a step back against San Diego State. And you know, and you could look at UCLA and say, oh, that seems like a little bit of a step back, you know, from Colorado. But I don't know if I'd see it that way. Number one, I think UCLA is better than Colorado. I don't think that's really a question.
Yeah, definitely.
So UCLA is better than Colorado. So that's one thing. But I look and I go, okay, you know, they went, you know, they had two games against vastly inferior opponents where they destroyed them. And then they had a game against a similarly talented team and they melted down in the fourth quarter. And then they had a game against a similarly talented team and they didn't melt down in the fourth quarter and, in fact, were able to come up with a big play to win the game. And then they were against a similarly talented team and probably even a slightly more talented team if you look at just talent across the board with UCLA. Probably a slightly more talented team on the road. They were right there. They had executed. They just came up a few plays short. To me, all of this sort of represents a nice, I guess, growing curve, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and so to me, it's like I see really encouraging signs. I see things that lead me to believe, you know, it's that three more wins is a possibility. I mean, I'm not going to call it likely, you know, but I'm going to say I think it's a possibility at this point to win three of the last seven.
Yeah, definitely. And just as an aside, as you were talking about, you know, UCLA is probably, you know, a little more talented. And really, if you're just talking about, like, recruiting and actual athletes, they probably are more, like, vastly more talented. And I think that you have to credit the coaching staff a little bit with how they're able to game plan. And when, you know, UCLA has, you know, their top 20 recruiting classes every year, and we have our whatever top 80 recruiting classes every year.
Well, UCLA's actually been putting together top 10 recruiting classes.
Yeah. And so we're sitting there with our, what, you know, what should be inferior opponent. And really, like, we didn't even have our best player playing in the game. And we had them on the ropes. Like, we had them. And I think that's part of the reason that, you know, you see, like, Bruins Nation just get so angry about these games, because they look at us and they just see this team that doesn't recruit and they don't spend any money on their program, and then that we have beaten them, you know, at least half the time. I think we've beaten them more than they've beaten us recently, and it must be infuriating to Bruins fans. But, and then to us, kind of look at it, you know, I think they playing within themselves, you know, knowing Marshall Lobestal's limitations, they put together a really good game plan, and it almost worked. And we, you know, we have to give them credit for that. I think this coaching staff actually has grown, and now they have a little bit of talent to put in their plan, and they're showing that their game plans aren't totally terrible.
Well, they're gonna face quite the challenge this weekend in trying to figure out how to work in their best player back into their game plan.
So,
as we mentioned earlier, Jeff Toole been cleared. He's gonna play. And you know, Paul Wolf was on with Ian Furness today on KJR, and basically, you know, he didn't say that Toole was gonna start, but it certainly sounds like, barring some kind of weird setback in the next couple of days, that the Jeff Toole is your starter. I mean, earlier this week, Paul Wolf was adamant that, hey, Marshall's our starter again, and da 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 da. And today in that interview, he basically was like, well, you know, Jeff looks good, and you know, he's definitely going to play. And when they sort of pressed him on who was going to be the starter, he said, you know, he didn't have an answer. And to me, then, you know, the only reason to back up off the Lobestal will be the starter thing is that Toole's going to be the starter. Because really, I mean, let's be, you know, Brian will be the first to tell you that Thursday and Friday practices, you're not going to see much on Thursday and Friday. No. You know, it's in terms of if they're trying to see something from Toole, you know, today and tomorrow, they're probably not going to see it, because Thursday is just sort of a, you know, a real light sort of shells, you know, going through the game plan kind of deal. Friday's a walkthrough, basically. So it's like, you know, it's not like they're going to see much. It may be a situation where, you know, they want to see how sore he is today from, you know, practice the last couple of days, things like that. But I'd be, at this point, I'd be pretty surprised if Toole's not the starter out there. And so I guess now they've got something to sort of manage. It's one thing they did talk about is that basically they made the game plan with Lobestal as a starter. So he's going to be running Lobestal's game plan, which I personally don't see as too much of a problem, but you know, it's going to be interesting to sort of see that. You know, are you of the opinion that if Toole starts, he plays the whole way, you don't even mess around with Lobestal?
Yes. And Brian alluded to it in his post, like, it just doesn't work out, and they tried it with Lopina and Lobestal, and obviously the talent level was much higher this time, but it just, like, what if Toole's going well? I mean, he's not going to come out, but if he's playing bad, it's like you can't just yank your best guy because he has a bad start. You know, it he could work himself into the game, and it's just, if you want him to play, have him play, like, and have him play the whole game. Because to be honest, I don't think we even have a chance if Lobestal plays. But if Toole plays, he's, you know, I absolutely hate this term, but he's like that X factor, and sure. Suddenly he's the guy that with his arm could, you know, make some big plays in the passing game. And, you know, in his his favorite receiver, Wilson, and, you know, they could make some big plays, and that's what we're going to need. We're going to need some big plays, because we're not going to just methodically push the ball down the field like we did against UCLA, because, you know, they're giving up 2 yards a carry right now. That's not going to happen. But with Toole, he's going to make Stanford think a little bit more about that deep ball, because Toole can make those 20-yard deep ends and those seam routes, but that Lobestal can't. And Stanford's going to have to think about that. And so that's why I play him. If he plays poorly, he plays poorly. We were probably going to lose anyway. And so just let's if you're going to start him, play him the whole way and have him, you know, get the work in, shake some of that rust off for the rest of our 6 games on the schedule.
Yeah, the only way that I would consider playing Lobestal would be if you know, the you know, we're heading into the fourth quarter and the game is completely out of hand.
Oh, absolutely.
And at that point then, and you know what, even at that point, I'm not even sure I play Lobestal at that point. You know, I might play Connor Halliday at that point.
Yeah.
And the reason why, it's just like this, you know, I mean, look, I'm totally with you. I'm thinking, you know, this game, yeah, I want to beat Stanford. And I think a sharp Jeff Tool is obviously the best way to beat, or the most likely way to beat Stanford. Mm-hmm. You know, how sharp is he going to be? Who knows? You know, I don't know. But what I will say is this, that I, like you said, I don't think we have any chance of beating Stanford with Lobestal. And so beyond that, I'm sort of thinking more about Oregon State. You know, I'm thinking more about Oregon in 2 weeks. You know, I'm thinking more about Arizona State and Utah. You know, the more, you know, that Oregon State game is going to be a really important one. And so, you know, what I want is I want Jeff Tool being sharp against the Beavers. And so if that means, you know, he plays, you know, the vast majority of the game against Stanford in order to make that happen, then I'm all for that. What I don't want to see is, okay, if the game's out of hand, you know, I don't know that getting an extra, you know, 15 snaps, you know, trying to play catch up with Stanford pinning their ears back and rushing the passer is necessarily a good situation.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you there.
You know, and so, and again, I don't know if there's much value in Lobestal going in there. So maybe you go to Halliday and just let him, you know, throw him to the wolves for a little while and let him get some experience because, you know, I just don't want Tool getting hurt, you know, at the part of a game where, you know, the game is sort of decided already. And, you know, and I don't anticipate the game being a blowout like that, but it certainly could be. You know, it certainly could be. So I think that's the only situation where I would see any kind of a timeshare being a good thing. What sorts of things are you looking at on Saturday as far as sort of keys for you? I know that, you know, I don't think your Stanford preview has hit the site yet, but I know you've been working on it. So what are some of the things that you've seen in sort of scouting Stanford, trying to figure out, okay, these are ways that WSU potentially either can attack them or needs to contain them defensively?
Well, one of the things that I came across today that, you know, I was shocked, and I was, you know, talking to Brian and we were trying to figure out why, and I sent you an email about it. Just Stanford, actually, they're 84th in the country on passing SMP for third down, which with Andrew Luck, you just wouldn't think that would happen. And it turns out that Luck, on third down is, if it's third and between 4 and 6 yards, is hitting only like 35% of his passes. And if it's less than 6 yards, he's at around 55%. And if it's more than 6 yards, he's only missed 1 out of 13 throws. But only 6 of those twelve completions have went for a first down. Uh-huh. So what I'm thinking, when it's long, they just dump it down, and they're not really trying to air it out when it's fourth and long or third and long, and which is really, and then when they're trying to throw the ball on, you know, 3rd and 4 to 6 yards, it's not going well at all. And which is just shocking when you consider just what sort of grasp that Andrew Luck has in the game and how well he is at reading defenses. And the only thing that I could really think of is that on those 3rd and shorters, they're not sending as many guys out into the route. And it's kind of like a play where you're looking for this one specific guy, like our 4th and short play where Barton runs that, you know, that quick out for 5 yards or whatever. And that we ran a few times against UCLA. I'm thinking it's something like that, where it's just a quick play and it's not there, and Luck throws it away, which that was surprising to me. Their rushing game, as much as they do run, and I think they take pride in their running game, I don't think it's as good as UCLA's, because they have that threat of the pass, but are not performing as well. I think they're ranked 45th in rushing SMP. And that's against, I think, that's just raw right now. It's not adjusted. That's the raw number. And that's probably against an easier schedule than UCLA's had. And they're actually not performing as well. So I think that their rushing game isn't totally unstoppable. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to stop it, but we could potentially hold it down to 4 yards a carry, what have you. And then obviously if you can get Stanford into those passing downs, I'm not saying we can stop Luck, you know, that may just be a small sample size, but so far this year, they really haven't performed that well on those, third downs when they have to pass. So, I thought that was really interesting. Those are the kind of two big weaknesses I saw. Their defense is absolutely just really good. their worst ranking is, I think, against passing S&P, and that's 23rd. Everything else is in the top 10. Even their rank passing downs are like 4th, which is not good for us. So I think scoring points against them is going to be a tough task. And yeah, like I said earlier, 2 yards a carry overall. I think they're at around 4 yards a play. The offenses that they play have been averaging. So it's going to be really tough. I think our defense is going to be what we're going to hang our hopes on, which is weird. But I think that's kind of where I'm looking at is going to be our best chance to keep it close, as if we can limit the run and force them into some third and longs.
Yeah, the interesting thing about their offense, I mean, for as much as Andrew Luck gets, you know, tons of attention, the reality is their offense hasn't really been a juggernaut this year. They've had plenty of games where they've started slowly and against not great competition, you know. Yeah. And so their defense has sort of, you know, carried them until the offense kind of starts clicking and they wear some people down and things like that. And so I think the key, one of the things, you know, I said on my Cougar Sports Weekly weekend preview was one of the keys is, you know, Cougs got to score some touchdowns early, you know, at least a couple, to sort of put some pressure on, not necessarily put some pressure on, but be able to, you know, if the game starts getting later and when Stanford sort of does start to click a little bit, that they're able to maybe, you know, play hang on just a little bit. And hang on to it. One of my big keys that I see is how WSU contends with Stanford's tight ends, because this is the best group of tight ends that they're going to face probably all year. And I know we sort of keep saying that, you know, SDSU had theirs, and I'm like, oh, you know, Joseph Fourier, you know, he's really good. And we did do a good job limiting him, but really they just sort of dedicated a disproportionate amount of attention to him. You know, Mizell was sort of, anytime Fourier crossed his face, he was like just running the other direction, you know, trying to cover him. So it's just sort of a situation where, you know, he's now they've got three of them to cover. And so with three people to cover instead of just one or two, it's sort of crazy. They'll line all three of them up in the offensive formation, and then they'll, you know, take, you know, they'll motion and split one of them out wide, or they'll line up with them wide and bring them in, and they'll do all kinds of creative stuff with them, and they're all very dangerous. So it's going to be interesting to see that. In terms of what, you know, a potential outcome would be as we sort of wrap this up, you know, for me, it's sort of one of those things where, you know, I'm not expecting a win, but I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility. I don't think it's, you know, crazy to I think it's crazy to expect it, but I would be disappointed if it just ended up in a straight blowout, you know, especially considering that, you know, it's at home. It's their first home game in a while, you know, sort of all these things that it's homecoming. So the place should be fairly packed. You know, if it's a total blowout, I think that would be somewhat surprising. You know, and given the way they sort of have been moving with their, you know, they sort of have a setback and improve and have a little bit of a setback. This group has been one of the most resilient teams I think I've ever seen. Just like if we date back to, you know, 2 years ago, you know, a lot of these kids were, you know, freshmen, you know, 3 years ago or 2 years ago. And then last year with a lot of them who were freshmen last year. And, you know, and so you got all these, and they've just, every time they get slapped around or kicked in the face or whatever by somebody, they come back stronger. And then when you take into the account that they were able to do some things against Stanford last year, you know, I think all those things just sort of add up. I think this team's going to come out with a little bit of confidence and a little bit of swagger, and I'll be a little shocked if Stanford is able to just sort of line up and hit them in the mouth and scare the crap out of them like Stanford's been able to do with so many other teams this year. I think Stanford's going to be in for maybe a little bit more of a fist fight than what they anticipate.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree. I think, you know, like you said, it's going to be packed. I think the crowd's going to be as energized as any crowd has been for a WSU football game in probably 4 or 5 years. So I definitely don't see them blowing us out of the water. And we just need to make sure that we don't beat ourselves, or they need to make sure they don't beat themselves with, you know, stupid turnovers, or, you know, like Colorado, they had a chance to take an early lead and they have a kick blocked and return for a touchdown. So those are just things that when you're playing a superior team can spiral and you know, spiral downward. And suddenly, you know, I think back to UCLA came, or USC came to town when I think I was a sophomore, and it was 14-0 before our offense even touched the ball, because, you know, we tried a few embarrassing things on kickoffs, and those are the things that you have to avoid if you want to upset top 10 teams. And I'm going to write in my preview, we haven't done that at home since 2001. When UCLA was ranked 9th, which I was surprised to see that was, you know, I was looking through the games and I just kind of clicked on that one, just because UCLA is probably ranked in the top 10, maybe the second or third most out of any Pac-12 team, and it turns out that the Cougs were ranked 16th and beat number 9 UCLA, and so it's been almost 10 years since we beat a top 10 team at home. So, and most of the games have turned out to be that sort of, we kill ourselves right away, or, you know, the last few years it's just been, we were overmatched so bad to a point. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the game, you know, 'cause it's kind of no pressure. Just, you go out there and no one thinks you're going to win. So just, let's see how our guys play. You know, they're used to playing under that situation. So, I don't think they're going to be playing tight or anything. If any team's used to getting their butts kicked, you know, and having no faith, you know, having no faith that you're going to win, it's our team. So I don't think they're going to be tight. I think they're going to go out there and they're going to have fun and they're going to play loose. And hopefully that leads to them playing really well.
Yeah, I think one thing that's become abundantly clear is that these guys expect more out of themselves than we even expect out of them, mm-hmm. which is sort of remarkable. And I think, you know, when you look at a team like UCLA, you know, they're obviously, that's a team that doesn't expect much out of itself.
And so, yeah.
You know, these guys really do expect to win. I remember last year against Oregon, when Oregon came to town and Oregon was ranked, you know, 2 or 3 or whatever they were right before they went to 1. And, you know, we were all just pleased as punch that they even hung around. We were like, wow, this is amazing. And and they were disappointed that they had a chance to win. They were like, they genuinely believed that they could win. And I think, you know, if Paul Wolf ends up really truly turning this thing around and getting to stick around at the end of this year, I think that will be, to me anyway, his greatest success, is sort of somehow, some way, despite all of the odds, despite all of the, you know, the butt kickings week after week after week for 2 years, you know, that he got these guys to continue to believe in themselves and to expect to be great. I think all of those things are pretty remarkable for a coach to have done that. So I think, you know, I certainly don't think they're going to come out and be intimidated or crap themselves, you mm-hmm. know, as it were, early in the game. I just hope they are able to, you know, basically do whatever it is that they are able to do, moving the ball, and convert some of it into not just field goals, but touchdowns, and maybe play from ahead for a little while. Not that I don't think that's going to affect Stanford, but as I said, you know, if they can play from ahead, you know, maybe they can add on a touchdown here or there down the stretch and perhaps hang on. So,
yeah.
And because Stanford, I mean, I'm going to be honest, you know, Andrew looks awesome, but Stanford's not built to, you know, fling the ball all over the place. They just don't have those kinds of weapons this year like they did last year. They've got
they still have Chris Owusu.
They still have Chris Owusu,
who's been playing at Stanford for 6 years, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, but other than that, yeah, they don't have Doug Baldwin anymore.
Yeah, and they don't have Ryan Whalen anymore. They've got Griff Whalen, but he's certainly not his brother. And so, you know, they just don't have the same kind of weapons that they had. And so, you know, if you can play from ahead, you know, maybe there's a little bit of pressure there. Maybe their sphincters get a little tight, and, you know, maybe they start to feel it a little bit as the sun sets on the Palouse, you know, and darkness and cold descends on Martin Stadium. I don't know. I feel like the NFL films voice right there, but, you know, the frozen tundra of Martin Stadium. But anyway, yeah, should be a fun one. So, Well, on behalf of Craig Powers, my name is Jeff Neusser. That does it for another week of the CougCenter.com podcast. Be sure and catch us next week. If you've been trying to subscribe to us on iTunes, by the way, I'm still working on getting that resolved. But be patient with us and hang tight, and we will get that done soon. So for Craig, I'm Jeff. Thanks a lot.